Hi there, folks. I'm Dara Starr Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm glad to be back with you to talk about the issues that matter. Now, before we get started, I want to let you know that you can find me online. Look for me on the KJLH Instagram page at Radio Free KJLH. You can also find me on my Instagram page at Dara Tucker B, D-A-R-A-T-U-C-K-E-R, and the letter B. If you're wanting to talk more in depth about the topics that I raise here, that's always a good place to get in touch with me. If you have questions, or even if you want to push back and challenge me on something that I said, you can go to Radio Free KJLH or Dara Tucker B on Instagram and let's talk about it. I'm on all other social media, including TikTok, Facebook, Threads, YouTube. I'm on all those other platforms under Dara Starr Tucker. That's Dara with one R and Star with two. So that's the socials. But of course, you can always pull up to the website at kjlhradio.com to listen to any of the episodes of The Breakdown that you may have missed in podcast form. Listen to those episodes on demand online at kjlhradio.com. And KJLH also has an app that you can download so you can take the music or The Breakdown with you wherever you go. Find the KJLH app in the App Store. It's available on both Android and iPhone. Now, what are we getting into today on The Breakdown? Well, it's a topic that I've wanted to elucidate for a long time now. And today's show will really just be a primer on the subject. There are so many layers to this issue. I'm talking about the attack on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion nationwide. In case you're unaware, there's a battle taking place at the polls, in the courtrooms, in the hearts and minds of people everywhere around this concept of so-called wokeness. And I say so-called because I really dislike the co-opting of that word by the right. I despise it. In fact, woke is a term that has deep roots in the struggle for Black liberation, and it's been gentrified and misused and abused so horribly. I honestly cringe every time I hear the word woke appropriated by certain folks. But this is a blanket term now for anything that conservatives deem as undesirable. And they put a lot under this umbrella of wokeness. Governor of Florida Ron DeSantis has very famously waged an anti-woke campaign from the day that he got into office. It's kind of his brand. He was the first to pass a so-called Stop Woke Act in 2022 with the help of Florida's majority Republican legislature, and was looked at as a golden boy on the right for that. And he tried to run for president under that banner. He was the anti-woke guy. That brand was not enough to carry him through the primaries or help him to conduct a successful campaign against old Donnie, though. He was kind of a one-trick pony who really didn't have a lot to offer on the national stage, but that's not to say that he won't be back in 2028. And by the way, that's the example that we should be looking at if we're wondering why someone like Gavin Newsom has not presented a real challenge to Joe Biden for the 2024 election. There's really no glory in it for someone who wants to have a political career. If you step up and you challenge the party's frontrunner, you are persona non grata in a lot of circles. He's made a mortal enemy of Trump now, and he was humiliated on the national stage. It's going to take DeSantis a lot of image rehab to move past that perception of him being one of the many wannabes that was defeated by Trump. So Gavin Newsom, he don't want that smoke on the left. If he were to go after Biden, he would have to do it in ways that would really weaken Biden on the national stage, and it would weaken him for the general election. And ultimately, Gavin Newsom would probably lose a bid to try to primary Joe Biden, since Biden has had a lot of wins. Whether some people want to acknowledge that or not, he's actually gotten a lot accomplished, and there just isn't a significant enough reason to try to take him down from within the Democratic Party, not by anyone who wants to be taken seriously. So that's why Newsom and many others are probably well advised to just bide their time, wait till 2028 to pursue those presidential ambitions. But of course, by that time, he'll probably have Kamala Harris to deal with. But in regard to DeSantis and his fight to rid Florida of wokeness, now there's a key provision in this Stop Woke Act that's being challenged in court for how it may violate free speech laws. The Stop Woke Act in Florida puts limits on any company with 15 or more employees in terms of how they can talk to their employees about race. It's really designed to prevent the teaching of critical race theory, or what they perceive to be critical race theory, concepts around structural or systemic racism. It limits diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings from putting any sort of guilt on white people about the harm that racism has done or is doing in the present day. So it's all about preventing DEI trainers from using any language that would cause a white white person to feel guilt or culpability around the history of race or racism in this country. So now a group of businesses have challenged this law. They say it violates free speech laws and is not enforceable. And a 3-judge panel of the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agrees with them. They say that a key part of the Stop Woke Act is unconstitutional because it limits speech only about certain ideas that are deemed offensive and not others, which is a violation of the First Amendment. In this case, may make it all the way to the Supreme Court. We shall see. But there are 28 states right now, mostly Republican-led, that are attempting to go after this DEI training, diversity, equity, and inclusion training. And if they can't eliminate it altogether, they're attempting to severely limit what diversity, equity, and inclusion trainers can discuss. So this is part of a broader strategy on the right to enforce a sort of colorblind ethos into government, into schools, into the workplace. There is no racism. There is no sexism. There is no homophobia or transphobia, because we, usually a bunch of straight white guys, say that there isn't. If the woke mob keeps talking about it, then we'll just create laws to silence them. It's the talking about it part that's wrong. We're not guilty of perpetuating racist practices or upholding systems of white supremacy. The woke mob is just whipping people up into a frenzy and trying to convince them that there's a problem when there really is none. So here's a list of things that you can and cannot say, and we're all just going to close our eyes and plug our ears and pretend that all is well and forget that you brought any of this up. I think that they think they can legislate themselves back to 1980 and the start of the Reagan era, because those were the glory days for a lot of these people. So yes, civil rights had been fought for by that point, and some important court battles had been won. Brown v. Board, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, Loving v. Virginia, which legalized interracial marriage nationally. Most of these folks are okay with the advancement up to a point, but they start to bristle at the new stuff. Don't ask them to make a cake for a gay couple's wedding or accept that a trans person exists out in the world. Don't ask them to acknowledge structural racism. God forbid. So this fight against so-called wokeism is in full swing in many states. And I want to kind of focus on the most recent state to pass a major law going after DEI, and that's Alabama. Alabama is really on a roll right now because the state legislature just passed a bill declaring that all fetuses are children, which now opens up a whole can of worms legally and ethically. And it frankly just doesn't sound like a lot of this is well thought through. It's like they got excited that Roe v. Wade got overturned, and now it's just open season to start passing all sorts of regressive laws that most people don't even agree with. I mean, anytime they've tried to bring ballot measures before voters, they fail miserably. There really aren't a lot of people that are in favor of these strict laws, not even Republicans. So I'm going to play you a recent video that I did from my socials where I discussed these recent legislative and legal developments in Alabama around DEI and reproductive health, this attempt to move the state of Alabama towards this extreme rightward position. And in this piece, you'll hear the reason that I think a lot of these changes are being made in a way that bypasses voters. They're not letting people vote on this stuff. This is all being done through the state legislature and the state Supreme Court. So here's the piece I did on these restrictive laws in Alabama, and I'm going to come back afterwards and we're going to talk about it.
Alabama, are y'all okay? Are you okay? Just blink twice. Blink twice. Let us know you're okay.
Alabama has banned all DEI programs. Governor Kay Ivey signed a bill that bans all diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in schools, public colleges, and state agencies. 80 anti-DEI bills have been introduced in 28 states and in Congress, by the way. And 8 states have already implemented anti-diversity bills, with many more to come. The Alabama bill also contains a provision that requires all colleges to designate bathrooms for use by individuals based on their biological sex. This bill was passed by the Republican-led state House and Senate. Their state Senate has 27 Republicans and 8 Democrats. That's just a little tidbit for those of you who like to claim that both parties are the same. They are not. Democrats in the state Senate tried to fight this, but there just weren't enough of them. Are you voting in your state elections, by the way? Because these state lawmakers control so much. Anyway, Alabama ranks number 7 for states with the lowest literacy rates. 24% of the population lacks basic literacy skills. Standardized test scores in Alabama are the 4th lowest in the country, with only 27% of 4th graders being proficient in math and 30% of 4th graders being proficient in reading. And it just gets worse as children get older. Alabama has one of the highest poverty rates in the country. 16% of Alabamans are living below the poverty level. But this is what they're prioritizing: anti-DEI legislation. This is what had to be rushed through. So what does this bill specifically ban? Well, DEI offices have to shut down entirely. These offices provide so much support to minority and marginalized students in so many capacities. Those offices have to be shuttered now. Schools and state offices cannot require that anyone attend diversity training. They can't teach any coursework that promotes what these lawmakers see as a divisive concept. There's a lot of language around so-called divisive concepts in this bill. So what do they consider divisive? Well, apparently a divisive concept is anything that implies that any race could ever be considered inferior or superior, or that anyone should have to acknowledge or affirm any sense of guilt, complicity, or need to apologize because of their race, religion, sex, whatever. So in other words, you can't discuss the very foundation of racism. The idea of one group setting themselves up as superior to the rest, the very foundation on which this country was built, that's divisive according to this new law. And it's just so interesting that there is specific wording here about not making anyone feel guilty about being part of a so-called superior race. So it's clearly designed to absolve white people of any guilt or culpability around the continuing effects of systemic racism, which, according to most of these people, does not exist. So they are going after the much ballyhooed critical race theory. Just don't teach that. It does not exist. It is not valid. I mean, of course, if you weren't alive in 1850, clearly you are not personally responsible for slavery. And if you weren't around in 1920, clearly you were not personally responsible for Jim Crow. But to say that you can't discuss how the descendants of those people who were alive then can benefit from those systems in the here and now is ludicrous. There's also language in there that rejects the idea that anyone is inherently racist or sexist or oppressive, which runs completely counter logic to scientific studies about inherent bias, by the way. And as for the other Alabama foolery, y'all know I grew up in the church. The abortion stuff is kind of hard for me to talk about still, but these laws just keep getting more and more insidious. Now, you might remember that Alabama instated a total abortion ban in June of 2022, extreme even by conservative standards. Well, their state Supreme Court recently ruled that embryos are now considered children. And there's all kinds of language in that ruling that totally blurs the separation of church and state. Lots of religious language by the head justice in this ruling with no attempt whatsoever to hide his motive. The ruling itself declares that people will be subject to the wrath of God if embryos are killed. And as a matter of fact, the word God appears more than 41 times in their ruling. And I'm not saying you can't have your beliefs, but how does this belong in a court ruling? This is not a theocracy. I am concerned. And of course, being motivated by ideology and their own theology, they really didn't think it through, and they threw in vitro fertilization clinics into a state of chaos, wondering whether they would be prosecuted for disposing of unused embryos. So the clinics started closing for fear of prosecution, and then the state Senate rushed a bill through that created this magical immunity shield for IVF clinics, which Governor Kay Ivey quickly signed. So they're children, and it's murder if it's abortion, but they're not children. And it's not murder if it's IVF. I'm just trying to get clear on where all the lines are drawn. These situational ethics are mind-boggling, really. It's total hypocrisy. And in my mind, this is all about saving the master race from extinction. This clip that I'm going to show you, this is Senator Tommy Tuberville, whatever, but this clip is really telling. Just watch this.
We need to have more kids. We need to have an opportunity to do that. And this, I thought this was the right thing to do. But
IVF is used to have more children. And right now, IVF services are paused at some of the clinics in Alabama. Aren't you concerned that this could impact people who are trying to have kids?
Well, that's for another conversation. People need to have that. We need more kids. We need the people to have the opportunity to have kids.
When he says we, I think we all know that he is not talking about a single black mother in the projects. There is a very specific group of people that they are concerned are not having enough children. And I think it might have something to do with the fact that white people are predicted to become a minority in the US by 2045. White people under 18 are already a minority. But Alabama has the sixth highest infant mortality rate in the US at 6.99 infant deaths per 1,000 live births. And it's at number 3 for worst maternal mortality rate at 36.2 maternal deaths per 100,000 births. And of course, all of those stats are much higher for Black and Native women. And I'm not sure how any of that translates to being pro-life at all. It's pro-birth. for a certain segment of the population, by the way, but it's not pro-life. Now, this is Alabama, but they're about to institute a similar ban in Florida, and a lot more states are going to follow. I guess the point of this is that I am tired of having conversations with people about how voting doesn't matter and how we don't live in a democracy and about how both parties are two wings of the same bird and blah, blah, blah. We all know that both parties have big problems, big ones. But these people instating these draconian laws that are so far out of step with the majority of voters, these people were voted in by people who do believe in democracy, by people who do believe that their votes count. And what really angers me is that conservative activists are purging voter rolls right now, trying to create an unfair advantage for themselves, and a lot of us are asleep at the wheel. There's a certain demographic that's gonna get up and they're gonna put on them red ball caps and they are gonna make sure that they know where their polling place is, or they're gonna send in their absentee ballot to avoid the long lines on election day. And they're gonna do this to elect state senators and school board presidents and city commissioners and state Supreme Court judges and on and on and on. And there will be those of us who sit at home and claim that none of it counts. We're just the victims of our fate and we just need to let it all burn down. And then we'll claim that liberals don't do anything, or we can't vote our way out of this mess. All of the hackneyed aphorisms that you hear around non-participation in the democratic process. There's really no deeper truth that I'm trying to share with you right now. I'm not being paid to make this video or to engender you to any politician. I'm not being paid to call you to action, none of that. I just want us to stay awake. They call these laws that they're passing anti-woke laws, okay? They have literally told you that they do not want you awake, and I wonder why. Let's keep our head in the game. Don't lose faith. Please, let's keep fighting for something better than this. Check your voter registration. Check it. Check it now. Okay, so they're serious about this stuff, and we have to be too. The devil does not go on vacation. He does not take PTO. He don't even take smoke breaks. These folks are relentless with the foolery, which is why we have to be vigilant. We need to let them know that we are plugged in, we are paying attention, and we are galvanized. Now, I want to point to a similar fight that's happening around affirmative action on the national level. I recently did a breakdown on a man named Edward Bloom, who's been at the forefront of the battle to end race-based affirmative action for the better part of 30 years. This is a real vendetta for Edward Bloom, and like a lot of these folks on the right, he is very well-funded. Though he says he's a terrible fundraiser, but he's been blessed, he says, with a group of well-heeled donors that want to see him run that anti-affirmative action pigskin down the end zone. So who is this Edward Bloom guy, and how has he affected the fight against affirmative action in this country? Why is he so fixated on this issue? Here's the breakdown on Edward Bloom, and I will be back to give you my closing thoughts on this. Meet the man who ended race-based affirmative action in the United States, Edward Bloom. Edward Bloom has made it his life's work to make us all believe that we live in a colorblind society, not to advocate for the marginalized, but to make sure that the groups who've done the marginalizing from day one don't feel that the tide is turning against them. After his success at getting the Supreme Court to end race-based affirmative action in 2023, he set his sights on the corporate world. He has a whole slew of lawsuits planned to effectively end DEI programs everywhere. Oh, and did I mention he's responsible for gutting the Voting Rights Act too? Yeah, he's a real gem. And he is just getting started. I'm Dara Starr Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. Now, Edward Bloom is not a lawyer by trade. He's a stockbroker. He sees himself as a yenta, or a matchmaker of sorts, that finds people or corporations that he sees as being discriminated against because of their race or ethnicity, and he pairs them with lawyers. Then, if the lawyers think that the plaintiff has a case, he raises the money for their lawsuits. Kind of like a sponsor. On the surface, it almost sounds like honorable work until you realize that he's not doing it for the marginalized. He's fighting for the dominant members of the culture who've been given every advantage in life. He clearly sees himself as some sort of colorblind equalizer. He claims that all he cares about is preventing race from being used to help or harm anyone, but somehow he's never advocated to eliminate unfair disadvantages for black or brown people because of the actions of a white person. He seems to be solely focused on so-called reverse racism. It's clearly his calling. He says that he starts his day at 4:30 a.m. reading newspapers and looking for cases of racial discrimination. Bloom is funded by a lot of powerful, wealthy right-wing benefactors. See, he runs this right-wing legal defense fund called the Project on Fair Representation. It's basically an anti-affirmative action group that sues schools, governmental organizations, and corporations that implement policies around diversity because they harm white people, I mean, he doesn't go after policies that attempt to level the playing field for disabled people or gay people or women. No, just race stuff. And over the years, he's gotten pretty good at getting the Supreme Court's attention. His villain origin story started in the 90s when he decided to run for Congress as a Republican in a district that was pretty heavily gerrymandered to include a high percentage of black folks. He lost, of course, which incidentally is how a lot of his cases start. Somebody doesn't get into an Ivy League school that they wanted to get into, or doesn't get a job that they felt that they were entitled to, or in his case, can't convince black people that he isn't the Joker come to life, and boom, he's telling the Supreme Court on you. The first time he got something all the way to the high court was that case around gerrymandering, and he won. His next big case to make it to the Supreme Court was for a young woman named Abigail Fisher. He helped her to sue the University of Texas at Austin because she didn't get in, and there were minorities who did get in who had lower grades than her. But he couldn't make a sufficient case to the court that UT's practices were unconstitutional. Never mind that Abigail's grades and SAT scores were good, but not stellar, and UT's turndown rate was higher than Harvard's that year. And yes, 5 black and Latino students who had lower grades than Abigail got in, but 42 white students with lower grades than her did too. Because grades were just one of the many factors being considered, not to mention that there were 168 black and Latino students with grades that were better than Abigail's that didn't get in. He thought he had the perfect litigant in Abigail, but her case just wasn't strong enough. He had to come up with a better strategy, and he finally figured out how to successfully stick it to minorities by using another minority group against them. He figured out that using Asian students to make his point would be a lot more effective than using white ones. So in 2022, he joined with the Asian American Coalition for Education, and he sued Harvard for not admitting as many Asian students as they should have. And this time, it worked. Thanks to Trump, the Supreme Court was stacked with super conservative judges, many of whom had been waiting for decades to get their hands on affirmative action. Just race-based affirmative action, though. No need to question whether gender, sexuality, or disability should be on the chopping block, too. No, the Supreme Court outlawed only race-based affirmative action in 2023. Oh, but they did make a generous exception for military academies like West Point. Bring them all the black and brown applicants you got. Now, to be fair, Edward Blum did try to appeal that decision, but the Supreme Court does have their standards, and making it hard for black and brown people to enter the military is apparently where they draw the line. So now Blum and his billionaire buddies are feeling emboldened, and they are determined to bring litigation against anyone attempting to enact race-based diversity mandates. That includes private businesses, internships, scholarships, and research grants that are geared towards providing funding and support to minorities. He even succeeded in getting an injunction to prevent the Fearless Fund, a venture capital firm, from awarding black women grants. Yeah, this guy's a pretty fearless social injustice warrior, just fighting the good fight. And somewhere along the line, he managed to completely gut the Voting Rights Act. Because of Edward Blum, the Supreme Court ruled that Southern states with notoriously discriminatory voting restrictions could change their voting laws anytime they wanted to, which was something that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was created to prevent. This guy is pretty nauseating, and this is one of the many reasons that it makes my blood boil when people claim that liberals and conservatives are the same and your vote doesn't matter. Edward Blum was actually raised in a pretty liberal environment, but he was indoctrinated into neoconservatism when he moved to Texas in the 80s. And now he's out here propped up by right-wing millionaires being a full-on menace to society. Edward Blum is 70. He is not going to be around to see the long-term impact of these laws. He won't have a lot of time to experience the world that he is creating for us. At some point, we have to take the reins and decide what kind of future we want. If we just sit on the sidelines, we're leaving our future in the hands of people like him. And I don't know about you, but that is not an acceptable option for me. So these are some very powerful and determined forces that are launching these targeted attacks on things like DEI and affirmative action, reproductive rights, and they are not done. But guess what? Neither are we. We are arming ourselves. We are informing ourselves. I plan to bring you some deep dives into affirmative action specifically in the coming weeks and months. What are some other avenues that schools can use to ensure a racially and economically diverse student population? California has a very long and storied history with this. It's been at the forefront of this topic. I want to talk about that as well. And I want to talk about some groups that we can get involved with that kind of present a counter narrative to a lot of these really well-funded right-wing groups. How can we get involved and make our voices heard forward and present a real, organized, oppositional force to these attacks on our civil rights. I love talking down these topics with you, doing these deep dives, and finding our way to some deeper truths. If you're enjoying these discussions, drop by the Instagram page and let me know. You can find me at Radio Free KJLH or on my personal page, Dara Tucker B. I'm at Dara Star Tucker everywhere else. That's Dara with one R and Star with two. Thanks for joining me here on The Breakdown. Let's do this again next week, same time, same place. We'll be talking about the issues that matter. Take care of yourselves, stay plugged in, rebuke the devil, and stay hydrated. I'll see y'all next week. And until then, let's learn to shout.